The disappearance date of his divine grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, by whose infinite kindness we are all here in Vrindavan together, worshipping the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar, the association of very exalted and wonderful devotees. Srila Prabhupada gave us the most precious gifts, his books, the name of Krishna, Vrindavan Dham, uncountable gifts. But one of his greatest offerings is the association of those devotees who were near and dear to him. And tonight we have two such exalted personalities. His Holiness Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj and His Holiness Srila Giriraj Maharaj. Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj was one of the original first disciples of Srila Prabhupada. I have to be very brief, which is very difficult under the circumstances. But he was at Prabhupada's side through practically the entire Hare Krishna movement during Prabhupada's pastimes. And the type of work that Srila Prabhupada offered him was very difficult. I remember the first time I met Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj was in Cross Maidan of Bombay. And how many people were attending? About 10,000 or something? There was about 10,000 people there. And I was just in the middle of the crowd, sitting like a lonely sadhu, just coming from Himalayas, matted hair, a begging pot. And one Gurudas, he came up to me, he just ran through the crowd and said, Prabhupada wants you to sit next to him on the stage. And I never even met Prabhupada. And he took me by the hand and I came up to the stage and Prabhupada pointed, you sit just here, just a little off to the side. The devotees were having kirtan. And then there was a lecture Srila Prabhupada gave. And as he was walking off the stage, he came right next to me, and I went to touch his feet. And one very exalted, effulgent personality approached me and said, no one touches Prabhupada's feet. And that was His Holiness Srila Tamal Krishna. And then Srila Prabhupada looked at me and smiled and said, you can touch my feet. So you can see he had very difficult services. Prabhupada would tell him to do one thing, but then Prabhupada would tell others to do another thing. And at that same Cross Maidan Pandav program, I met His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj. And he engaged me in my first devotional service in the Hare Krishna movement. People were stealing the Back to Godhead magazines, so he was having me tie them with string to the tables. Anyways, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was Prabhupada's secretary longer than anyone, and he's just an ocean of knowledge of the teachings and the wonderful pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. He was the original GBC of India. And Srila Giriraj Maharaj, of course, he worked hand in hand with Srila Prabhupada for many, many years, performing great austerities to to build the beautiful temple in Juhu, Bombay. So I can't think of two more desirable people to be on this auspicious day with than these two wonderful personalities. So we are really greatly fortunate. Throughout the world, the Hare Krishna movement would be dying and aspiring to be at their lotus feet just now. Very well. So everyone, let us welcome them from the core of our hearts by loudly saying Hare Bol.
So we thank Srila Raghunath Swami Maharaj for giving us this opportunity. Certainly, he is a unique person because it's very rare for someone who is born in the Western world to have taken to spiritual life according to our Vedic culture at such an early time, even before Prabhupada's Hare Krishna movement came here. He was already living as a sadhu in the Himalayas. So it indicates such a person is having performed these activities from previous times. But the touchstone of Srila Prabhupada's association has now made everything very perfect. Srila Raghunath Swami has been very kind to me, giving me his association. In the past 2 weeks, we spent some very wonderful evenings together at Govardhan, which I think I will always cherish. Very special. Even now, just remembering it makes me want to go with him there, sit with him on the roof of that wonderful building.
Even me.
Even he likes to go there. It's such a special place. I feel like that upper roof has somehow, you know, been officially established by our sitting there together that evening, the night of bathing at Radhakund. We stayed there for, must have been 3 or 4 hours, up until 10:30 or 11 when he had to go to Radhakund. We just couldn't leave that place. And discussing Hari Katha, Prabhupada Katha. So these associations like this, and very favorable association, and very favorable circumstances, are an opportunity for us to open our hearts. And when devotees open their hearts, then we can actually understand Krishna Bhakti. It is said that a devotee is a place of pilgrimage because wherever he goes, he carries Krishna in his heart. But unless he opens his heart, we can't get the darshan of Krishna. And it requires the proper association, arrangement, situation to induce a devotee to feel confident enough to want to open his heart. So this should be actually the level or quality of our associating with each other. The relationships should not be superficial. They have to be deep. There has to be some depth within us, and the exchange should be deep. I was Srila Prabhupada's GPC representative when India was one zone. Actually, Prabhupada was the GBC, and I was his foot servant. And as Maharaj explained, it was not very easy. Because Prabhupada would tell me something, and then I would go and say, Prabhupada said to do it like this, and Prabhupada would come and say to do it the exact opposite way.
The Prabhupada ki.
Eventually everyone learned not to take me very seriously, which is not a very good situation for GBC. Anyway, that went on for about 4 years, and finally I got ill, and I had to get an operation. So they took me to the, what's the name of the hospital?
Jaisalok
Hospital. And in Jaisalok, so I underwent the operation. While I was being operated on, Prabhupada came in a jeep from Juhu. He drove in an open jeep trying to get there in time to stop the operation because he felt it wasn't safe. This is a diversion from what I want to talk about, but because these are all Bombayites.
Many are doctors too.
So they'll appreciate more. So he tried to come thinking that this operation would be better performed in the West. So, in any case, while the operation, they put me on an anesthetic. And while I was being operated on, I had a dream. And when I finally came out of the operation theater back into the room, they wheeled me in, and Prabhupada was there. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, I just had a dream about you. While the anesthetic was being administered, I was meditating on the aarti ceremony of Radharas Bihari. And then I went into this dream. And in this dream, Srila Prabhupada was being called upon by the previous acharyas to give a report about his preaching on this planet. And he gave the report that he did not find the people of this planet were very intelligent. Nor were they capable of undergoing much austerity. And they were not pious. In fact, he said that I have not found that they have many good qualities. The only thing that has happened favorably so far is that they have somehow or other taken shelter of my lotus feet. This is what he said to them. So when I said this to Srila Prabhupada from my hospital bed, Prabhupada smiled and said, actually, it is so. Anyway, somehow seeing all people from Bombay, I remember this. So following that operation, I left India. And it wasn't very easy to do that because Prabhupada was spending 8 to 9 months of every year in India. So I knew I wouldn't get much association. And I was always in anxiety that especially I wanted to get very intimate association with Srila Prabhupada. And when the Chaitanya Chaitamrita came out for the first time, I read that when the spiritual master becomes elderly and retires, some of his disciples come to be with him and serve him in a very confidential way. So I was always thinking that somehow or other I hope that I can be one of those persons. When the last year came around, I was actually, there was a big project in what you may know called Gita Nagari in Pennsylvania. And I was the GBC there. So I was taking Brahmananda around, showing him, because Prabhupada asked that he stay with me. And I tried to enliven Brahmananda, and Brahmananda finally said to me, it's nice, but somehow it's not directly, you know, started by Prabhupada in the same way that some of his projects are. And somehow when he said that, it made me think that, yes, what is the use of my trying to develop so many projects, which I can always do in the future? But right now, if I can somehow directly assist Srila Prabhupada, if even one stroke of his pen becomes easier, then that will be more significant than anything that I can do, you know, on my own, so to speak. So I gave up everything else and I wrote a letter and I went to India and I wrote a letter saying, I want to become your secretary and I won't leave you. Because he was always having to change secretaries. And he accepted me. So, this last year of serving Srila Prabhupada was very special. Because Srila Prabhupada enacted a pastime of becoming ill. Prabhupada was like, in age, our grandfather. We were in our 20s, 30s. He was in his 70s and 80s. Like a grandfather to a grandson or granddaughter. So, he was so wise and experienced in every respect, such an elevated person, that it was always clear that he was maintaining us, and in all ways we were dependent upon him. The special quality, why don't you bring that forward? No use behind. Put it here. Special quality. Is that better?
Better?
Special quality of this year, last year's pastimes are Prabhupada agreed to become dependent upon his disciples. He did things in that year which ordinarily he would not have done. For example, he used to keep his keys to his almirah. He would never, ever let anyone hold these keys. When he got his massage, you know, he would put his gumcha on, take all his clothes off. What did he do with his keys? They would go under his watch band. Even he went in the bathroom to take the bath, the keys would go with him. And the keys had a very complicated system. I won't tell the whole pastime of the keys. But if you know his Bombay quarters, the key for his almirah, even that key was locked in a box. And the key to that box was locked in the drawer of his desk. And it was that key that he kept on his watch.
Key to the desk.
And I won't tell the pastime about that key, but it's another story. It'll give me some excuse to come to Chaupati. Then you remind me and I'll tell you the story. Just like the Mahabharata has so many stories and stories, so Prabhupada's Leela is like that. So, this last year, he finally surrendered the key. He let us hold the key. And that meant so many things, because in so many ways he became dependent. For example, he became dependent in terms of his medicine. He would not take his medicine unless I would administer the medicine. Sometimes it would come time and someone would try to give it and he would say, no, call him and he has to give it. And he would make me give him medicine. He had different medicines, because he said that when a patient is ill, there must be a doctor, just like a wife must have a husband. He used this analogy. A sick man must have a doctor, whatever the doctor is, there must be some doctor. So sometimes different doctors would come and they would debate about if they were qualified or not. One time a doctor came and asked Prabhupada, he was an Ayurvedic doctor, and he asked Prabhupada what his symptoms were. And Prabhupada said, immediately dismiss him. He said, because he's not an Ayurvedic doctor, because he should tell me what the symptoms are. To be rejected. Another time, two Ayurvedic doctors came and they began to argue about their parampara. So Prabhupada just lay there, letting them debate, and finally one defeated the other, and the defeated person left, and then Prabhupada said, okay, now you take care of me. This way, different doctors would come in to be treating Prabhupada. One of them diagnosed Prabhupada's illness that he had some excess liquid in the body. Body was filling up. So he was a chemist in his Grihastashram. So he said that since there's a swelling in the body, you get calcium carbonate powder, which is a white powder, and smear it on my body. So we began to smear Prabhupada's entire body with this calcium carbonate until Prabhupada looked exactly like, you know, one of the Shaivites, or like Lord, he said, like Lord Shiva. His whole body became covered with white powder. And he would sit there like this, covered with white powder all day with some clothing on. And the swelling would sometimes reduce. He let us bathe him. He would always take his own bath, but now we bathed him. In the morning the routine was, at a certain point, Prabhupada was living in this house, he would sleep upstairs. This was in, May, June. 77. We're talking about 77. It was a hot season. Before that,
should I keep going?
Yes.
Before that time, we're in Bombay. Maybe Srila Giriraj Maharaj will give us some talks on that time also. And from Bombay, Prabhupada became lured to go to Rishikesh by one ISKCON sannyasi who sings very sweetly, by the name of Navayogendra Swami, who lured Prabhupada to north, which is his place. Our godbrother, Srila Navayogendra Maharaj, took Prabhupada and brought him to Rishikesh. And from Rishikesh he came back to Vrindavan. So he was up on the roof. And at night he would take rest there. And in the morning his routine was that he would gradually wake up and I had to be there. And he would wake up and call my name. And then I would go and he would say, lift me up. And he would be lifted up in a very nice way. He would hold his hands out like this. And then I would lean over and he would put his hands around my neck. And then I would just pick him up. And so he would sit up. And then I would go behind his back and I would begin to scratch his back. And then he would start to talk. Sometimes this went on for an hour or more. And sometimes he would have a dream and tell me about it. He told me about an astrologer who foretold how he would go to the West and have opened so many temples. He told me about different preaching programs that he would dream about. So many things he would dream about. And we would just talk. Then sometimes I would give him a massage there, or sometimes take him for bath. Then I would bathe Prabhupada. And then I would sit him down and dress him. And I always would joke with him that you're such a good deity. You're such a nice deity. And Prabhupada would be smiling, and I'd have to put all of his clothing on, put his tilak on for him. And these very dependent activities only bound the devotee closer to his lovable object. Because Prabhupada was so independent, and it was always we who were dependent upon him. But now, in this final year, he allowed himself to become apparently dependent upon us. So, pastimes like this took place in this house. And in those days, Prabhupada was living upstairs at night, downstairs by day. The bed that you see in the house, that came later, after we took Prabhupada to London. But I'll tell you about that, but I think that perhaps we will hear something from Srila Giriraj Maharaj, as he likes to speak on whatever subject. Perhaps something about the final year. And then we'll tell some more things. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
I will start my part of the story a little earlier. Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur for the annual Gaur Purnima festival. And the plan was that after Gaur Purnima, he would come to Bombay. And we would have a Pandav program at Azad Maidan. So we came to Bombay and rented the grounds and made the arrangements. But in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada became ill. He was somewhat ill, but he became more ill. And the devotees in Mayapur did not think he should travel to Bombay. But we were not really sure if he was too sick to travel, or whether the devotees in Mayapur just wanted to keep him there. So we were convinced that he should come to Bombay, and that we should try to encourage him. So in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one verse.
Nai shamlati stavat uru kravangim, spishat yanartha pagamo yanartha, mahiya shan padarajo bishekam, niskinshananam navranita yava. That unless people smear on their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who is completely free from material attachment, they can never become Krishna conscious. So I quoted the verse and I told Srila Prabhupada that the only hope for the suffering humanity is you, if they get the dust of your lotus feet. So you must come to Bombay and give the dust of your lotus feet. Otherwise there is no other hope. And from what I heard later, Srila Prabhupada became excited and he said, yes, I must go. In the meantime, Srila Prabhupada had been pushing the construction in Bombay. And the project director named Sarabhi Swami was also not anxious for Srila Prabhupada to come, because he felt the building was not ready enough and that Prabhupada might get upset. So he wanted more time for the construction to get ready. So from both sides there was opposition. But anyway, I sent the letter to Srila Prabhupada and he agreed to come. And he did come. So when he arrived in Juhu, the car took Srila Prabhupada to the back of the property where Srila Prabhupada's apartment was located on the top floor of one of the old buildings at the back. But when the car stopped in front of the door, Srila Prabhupada refused to get out. He said, why have you brought me here? So the devotee said, well, Srila Prabhupada, your new quarters are not ready. So for now, you can stay in your old quarters. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not getting out here. Take me to the new quarters. Well, the new quarters were not ready. But Srila Prabhupada was determined. And so the car took Prabhupada to the new building, which you know. And the basic structure was there. But we never even thought that Srila Prabhupada would stay there. So there was so much dirt and dust and construction materials. And the place wasn't ready. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada went into the new quarters and he went into one room on the side and he said, now you get the rest of the place ready. And they began washing and doing everything to get the place ready. But it wasn't really ready, but Srila Prabhupada definitely made the point that he was going to stay there and we had to get it ready. In the meantime, the Pandal program was to begin at Azad Maidan. So we thought that Srila Prabhupada could stay in Bombay City because to go from Juhu to Bombay was too much, especially in Srila Prabhupada's fragile condition. And Srila Prabhupada had one good friend in Bombay named Kartikeya Mahadevya, where Srila Prabhupada sometimes stayed. So we arranged for him to stay there, and at the same time we thought, in the meantime, we'll get Prabhupada's quarters properly finished. So the Pandal in Srila Prabhupada's own words, the Pandal created a stir. Every night we had a very important chief guest. I'll just give some highlights of the program. Of course, the main highlight was Srila Prabhupada. Especially, he was very weak and thin. Practically, he had to be carried to the Vyasasan and propped up on the Vyasasan. He had no independent strength even to move. But when he would speak, and one night in particular, he spoke like a lion. We all felt like Lord Nrisimhadev had appeared from the pillar.
Heaviest day ever. More than ever, any other time I've ever seen.
Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami says it was the heaviest Srila Prabhupada ever preached. He never saw him preach so strongly. It was like a miracle, because he had no physical strength in his body at all. It was pure spiritual energy. Another highlight was that Srila Prabhupada wanted to encourage the scientific preaching. And Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj had prepared a slideshow with a scientific talk. Of course, the idea of the Bhaktivedanta Institute is that the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita should be presented in the language of modern science. The same philosophy, but in different words. So the slideshow and the talk were somewhat technical. We thought that the audience wouldn't be able to understand it. But Srila Prabhupada was ecstatic. He loved the presentation. And he commented that even if the people don't understand, it doesn't matter. Because when the material scientists speak, they don't understand either. Only they see some diagrams, some formulas, some scientific jargon, and they're impressed. So we will also impress them in the same way. It doesn't matter that they don't understand. And they will think at least we are as good as the modern scientists. But one other highlight, which is instructive for all of us who live in the material world, is one night the chief minister of Maharashtra was supposed to be the chief guest. His name was S.B. Chavan. He's now the home minister or something. So at the time there was great political upheaval in Maharashtra. And we never knew by the time he was supposed to speak at the Pandal whether he would still be the chief minister or not. He was supposed to speak after 5 days. So every day we would read the newspaper to see if he was still the chief minister. So on the 5th day, he was still chief minister. But we weren't sure if he would come, because we thought he may be very disturbed and very preoccupied. But he came. And he spoke something. But then Srila Prabhupada gave some very good instruction to the chief minister and to all of us. And he said that as long as we are in the material world, there will be upheavals. And we should tolerate them. But in the midst of the upheavals, we should not forget our real business, which is Krishna consciousness. So the chief minister listened and appreciated. Then the Pandal program ended, and Srila Prabhupada returned to his Juhu quarters, which were quite ready. Everything was clean, the furniture was in place. Most of the construction was completed, and he was very happy. He appreciated Sarabhi Swami's work so much. So then, he wanted to dictate a letter to the chief minister. And he asked the chief minister to join us, to join the Hare Krishna movement. So Srila Prabhupada sent the letter, and some days passed and there was no reply. So Srila Prabhupada, sometimes because his plans were so big, or his plans were so ambitious, one might think he was naive in the sense that other persons would think that the idea was impossible. And also because he was always ready to give others a chance to serve, to give others a chance to come to a higher platform, which other persons might think was not possible. So sometimes one might think that Srila Prabhupada was naive. But he wasn't. He was most intelligent, but he was just extraordinarily merciful. So after some days passed, he commented that there's no reply from the chief minister. Then he said, my letter has put him in a dilemma. Because he cannot say yes, he will join the Hare Krishna movement, and he cannot say no. So he is in a dilemma. So, in the meantime, Indira Gandhi had lifted the emergency and called for elections. So just at the same time there were elections, and the Janata Party won. Everyone was surprised. The Janata Party won. And everyone, at least in Bombay, everyone was in such a jubilant mood. Everyone was talking about Ram Rajya. Morarji Desai became the chief minister.
Prime Minister.
And they were coming to see Srila Prabhupada and saying, now we'll have Dharma, rule of Dharma, everything. But to us, Prabhupada commented, everyone is jubilant. The lion is gone, the lion is gone. But they don't know in place of the lion, they have a tiger. He didn't expect any change. He said the government is like that. The government is like that. The person may change, but the machine is the same. But he was very fascinated with the downfall of Indira Gandhi. Because previously he had said she was the most powerful woman in India after Durga Devi. She was so powerful, and during the emergency, everyone from top to bottom was worshipping her, flattering her, obeying her, everything. And suddenly, practically overnight, not just that she was a nobody, but she practically became a criminal. And Prabhupada was very fascinated. So he would ask his secretaries to read the newspaper. So I was the president of the temple, so I wasn't always with Srila Prabhupada like Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami and some others, but I would come regularly. So one morning when I was there, Srila Prabhupada called one of the devotees to read the newspaper, which may not seem so spiritual from one point of view, but from another point of view, everything had relevance to Krishna consciousness, especially to Srila Prabhupada. So before the devotee even began to read, Srila Prabhupada commented, "What the rascals are saying, that is newspaper." He gave his definition of newspaper. And he would have the devotee read the headlines, and especially if there was some headline about Indira Gandhi, he was very interested. And he commented, because it shows that there is no safety in the material world. There's no security in the material world. And one day, she could be at the top, and the next day she could be at the bottom. One day she could be in the Prime Minister's mansion, and the next day she could be in some prison. Of Shastra. And he commented even that when there are calamities in the material world, devotees feel happy because they feel that the philosophy is being confirmed, that there's no happiness in the material world, there's no safety. So various incidents took place, but finally in December of 76, a few months earlier, Srila Prabhupada had gone to Wardha on the invitation of Sri Ramakrishna Bajaj for Gita Samela. And Ramakrishna Bajaj's wife, no, sister, was the wife of Sriman Narayan, who had been the governor of Gujarat. Anyway, they were all very impressed by Srila Prabhupada. And Sriman Narayan's wife came to visit Srila Prabhupada in Juhu. And she was quite appalled, actually, to see Srila Prabhupada's poor health. So then also there was some talk about Srila Prabhupada going to Rishikesh. And Srila Prabhupada was enlivened by the idea. He hoped that he could get his life back there. And he quoted one verse from Shankaracharya about living by the side of the Ganges and taking the Ganges water every day. So Srila Prabhupada left. Now, you got up to about June. Are you going to go? Well, anyway. So then he went to Rishikesh and then came to Vrindavan. The Bhagavatam also is not in chronological order, exactly. So don't worry.
When we came to Rishikesh, Prabhupada went I think by
we took train, didn't we? The second time we took, we may have taken a plane to Delhi. I think we took a plane to Delhi from Bombay, and then we took a car from Delhi to Rishikesh. I remember in the car, when we finally came to Hardwar and saw the Ganga, Prabhupada commented about Allahabad, saying that it was the Rajgir, because the Ganga, Jamuna and Saraswati, they're all there at the Triveni. But we had gotten a house right on the side of the Ganga. In fact, the house's name was Ganga Darshan. It was arranged by D.P. Mandalia, who was one of the main directors of the Birla companies. It was his home at Rishikesh. It was a very nice house. So when we went inside, it was a private house overlooking the Ganga, just with a porch hanging over the Ganga. Prabhupada asked me if I could get him some water, Ganga Jal, to drink. So I immediately took my lota and I dove in to the water from the second floor. Prabhupada was sitting there getting a massage and I jumped into the water, which really amazed Prabhupada. But I thought it was very daring to do that. He didn't expect that I would have executed the order so quickly, so he watched. And I sort of waved at him and let him know that I was all right. But I got carried down the stream a little because it's quite swift. And then I dove down very deeply and got water and took the load and came upstream and came back and gave it to Prabhupada. And while he was still getting his massage, he drank the water and made a big burping sound. And he said, "This means that the water has been accepted." So he was very happy. He said, "I will stay in Rishikesh and I will drink Ganga Jal." The next thing he did is he said that I want jalebis and kachoris. And it was only about perhaps April at the time. And the shops were not started up yet because Rishikesh, I don't think it really goes all year. Some things are not going on all year. So we had to special order them. But when they finally were ready, Prabhupada, even though he was very ill and eating a restricted diet, he just began to eat hot jalebis and kachoris. And he said, "Jalebis are medicine. Hot jalebis." So this is medicine. Then Prabhupada began to, he said that he wanted us to take turns cooking. And for some reason he decided he was going to train us all in cooking. I mean, which is very odd because it was 1977 already. And they were trained cooks, but he said, "No, I want you all to learn how to cook." So he tried to teach me how to make chapatis. He came in the kitchen and he observed me rolling the chapatis and cooking them. But he wasn't very satisfied with the chapatis. So then he took over and he showed how to make. And he also taught another preparation, which was a Bengali preparation called Badi Chachuri. It's a chachuri, which means that, maybe I'm not pronouncing it properly. Chachuri. Anyway, he said that the way to make this preparation is that you cook it with mustard oil and you put in various things like aloo, and I think he put portal in or some, two or three sabjis in. And then he said, "You cook it until it burns. And when it starts to smoke, the pot starts to smoke and the sound comes out, fut, 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 fut." He said, "Then you know it is ready." So the next day he said, "Now make this preparation." So we made it.
And we brought it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada tasted it and he became very upset. So, you know, the cook, Bhakti Chiruswami, said that, you know, maybe I've used too much oil. And Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter how much ghee or oil, as long as the amount of chilies is equal in strength to counteract it. He said, the problem is you have not put any chilies in. You forgot the chilies. So in this way, he was going through different cooking episodes. And simultaneously, because Rishikesh is the home of this Maharishi, Yogi, the news came in the town that Prabhupada was there, and actually people became very much attracted. Because Prabhupada, the Rishikesh is like a Mayavadi mecca, you know. There's so many Mayavadis there. So Prabhupada being there, it was like some special, you know, a special thing. And the teachers from the Maharishi's Yogi's ashram all began to come every evening for darshan. And Prabhupada was giving darshan, and he was just, you know, absolutely devastating the Maharishi's philosophy. So one by one, all the teachers were becoming convinced that this Maharishi's philosophy was bogus. So then, after a few days of this, we got a message from the Maharishi. Prabhupada received a message that he offered his respects and said that he heard that Prabhupada was ill, and he recommended that Prabhupada not exhaust himself by holding these darshans. So, I remember one lady in particular came. And she was a Western lady, a European lady. And she challenged that, you know, you are doing so much talking of philosophy, but what do you do practically? What type of welfare work are you doing to help people? So Prabhupada looked at her, and then without, you know, taking into account that she was from the West and, you know, maybe he just became really heavy with her, and he said, what do you know about welfare? He said, I don't think you know what is welfare. And he gave the example about a boil. He said, if you have a boil on your hand, will it help to blow air on it? He said, what will puffing air on your boil do? If you have a boil, you have to lance it and draw away the pus. He said, so the whole Western civilization is like a big boil. And all of your welfare work is like blowing air on a boil. It doesn't do any permanent benefit. It simply gives some temporary relief. The only solution is to give transcendental knowledge, which is like cutting the boil and draining the pus. He was very strong like this. In this way, he was just cutting all of the people, you know, any questions which would come very strongly. And every morning he would have us go out and do Harinam. Every morning, even though we were a small group of five or six, he said, you must go out every morning and do Harinam. Similarly, when we first arrived in India in 1970 with Prabhupada, every morning he had us go out and do Harinam when we came to Calcutta, without fail for 2 hours. Early in the morning, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, we had to do Harinam. He wanted us to spread the holy name. After a while, it was very wonderful there, but suddenly one evening, a storm came. And it was like a huge dust storm, and the whole place became filled with dust. Even though I closed all the windows, Prabhupada said to me that this place has become like hell. So we must leave immediately. And he was getting palpitations in the heart. So he had the palpitations, the storm built up, he couldn't sleep, and so we had to suddenly get out, and he asked us to arrange a car. And we drove by car straight from Delhi to Rishikesh to Delhi, and we suddenly surprised the Delhi temple. The Prabhupada was there in the car. Prabhupada stopped there, and nobody even knew he was coming, because it was such a sudden thing early in the morning. And finally, we arrived in Vrindavan. And that was actually bringing us up to May, June, when we came back to Vrindavan. It was quite warm. Prabhupada's servants used to fill up his room with beautiful, fragrant flowers. The whole room would smell so sweet and fragrant. And I told you something about that. But gradually, Prabhupada's health did not get any better. And at a certain stage, he told me that now I think that I cannot live anymore. So you should call all the GBC now. So I called the entire GBC body, and they all came to Vrindavan. And there were so many things that happened. Some of it has been told in a book I wrote, a drama, and Srila Satsarupa Maharaj has told it in Lilamrita also. How Prabhupada would bring us to the point of total desperation where he would say, I have no more hope of living. And it would bring us to the point where we had no more hope of living because we realized that without you, we cannot live. And we would beg and plead with Srila Prabhupada. And gradually, somehow, Prabhupada would change and turn around and say, all right. One time, we went through one of these incidences, and Prabhupada kept saying, it's up to Krishna. And finally, we said to Prabhupada, but if it's up to Krishna, you're Krishna's pure devotee. So if you request Krishna, then he'll let you live. In this way, we were using different types of logic and reason, and Prabhupada would change. So after a while, somehow the GBC men all left, and the weeks and weeks went on. But again, Prabhupada became very discouraged about recovery. And it came to a point where he called me up to his room upstairs and finally said, now I have no more hope. And the way he said it, it was like this is after many, many, many weeks of trying to encourage him, and finally said, now I have given up all hope. I know I cannot recover anymore. Now let me just finish everything. So I was sitting there and I felt that, you know, the weight of the whole movement I felt was upon me because I was a secretary and it was my duty to encourage Prabhupada. So finally I just said that the problem is that you're in Vrindavan. I said that no one comes to Vrindavan to live, they come here to die. And I said the problem is that because you're in Vrindavan you're thinking of dying, but if you go to the West, then you'll get into the preaching mood and you'll start to think of living. And then I quoted a verse from the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna said to Arjuna that if you die, you will, you know, gain the heavenly planets, and if you live, then you will be able to enjoy this world. So I said, either way, it will be glorious. And so this somehow took hold in Prabhupada's mind and heart, and he became very enlightened at the idea of going to the West, and he immediately called his servants and he said that, he said, tomorrow Krishna has now organized, he's going to organize a traveling party, we're going to go and preach in the West. You know, he said, I have no sentiment about dying in Vrindavan. He said, even if I die in New York, he said, they can bury me on the roof. He said, because there's no space on the ground there. He said, I have no sentiment like this. I will go out and preach. And he became very enlightened. And so we gradually made arrangements and we took Prabhupada to London, to Bhaktivedanta Manor. And that was a very heart-rending experience for the devotees. First of all, the flight was a very difficult flight. Prabhupada had to be taken in a car on a mattress, laying down on the back of the car. We somehow put a mattress there and just lay there. I mean, Prabhupada was so weak that he couldn't even lift his arm. and still we took him. And he had to go through customs and immigration, all the ritual, you know, rigorous things. The flight was delayed for many hours. It was a long flight. But somehow he came, and when the devotees saw him in London, they started to weep because Prabhupada's physical appearance had changed so much. But still he was in London, and he became very happy. He met the Sankirtan devotees from Germany and Switzerland, and he became very enthused. He met Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who was at that time known as Ganesham Prabhu, and he encouraged him so much about his preaching. One by one, devotees came, and Prabhupada was feeling very enlightened. But then some medical problem developed, and he had to be rushed to the hospital. And after this, coming out of the hospital, he started to tell me, he said, I think we have to return. He said, I want to go back. He said, if I'm going to die, let me go and die in Vrindavan. So we didn't go to Vrindavan, we went first to Bombay. And we arrived there and stayed there for some time. Giriraj Maharaj can again tell us something about that stay in Bombay before finally Prabhupada came to Vrindavan.
We met Srila Prabhupada at the airport, and of course we were also shocked to see his condition. And we took him to his room in Juhu, and he immediately lay down on the bed. There was no question of anything else. But after all the devotees left, he asked me to stay by the side of the bed, and he was talking. And he commented about the kirtans in London, that they were wonderful. He also mentioned that one big industrialist from Bombay, named Mr. K.J. Somaya, had met him maybe in Vrindavan before he went to England, and that when he saw Srila Prabhupada's condition, even he began to cry. So our whole effort was to get the temple ready to be opened in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. And the work was going fast by then. There were many workers all over the premises. And the last work was the marble work. So there were many workers, you could hear them tapping the marble. And we asked Srila Prabhupada that doesn't the tapping of the workers disturb you? So he said, no, it is like music. So he stayed for some time, ultimately about 2 weeks. But actually, he was not feeling well. The constant tapping was disturbing him. He said it was like music to encourage us, to encourage the work, but actually it was hard for him. And he didn't want the work to stop also. So he called a meeting of the devotees, and Srila Prabhupada was on the bed, and the devotees were sitting around the bed. And Srila Prabhupada consulted the different devotees what he should do. He even raised the question of hospital. Although from the beginning, he always said, don't let me die in a hospital. Don't let them put tubes in me and this and that. But still, just to satisfy the minds of the devotees, he raised all the different possibilities and discussed. So, the option of the hospital was rejected. Then the question was whether to stay in Bombay or go to Vrindavan. And finally, maybe Kaladri, said that ultimately Krishna will decide what will happen. And until Krishna does decide, you have to be somewhere. So why not be in Vrindavan? So it was concluded that Srila Prabhupada would return to Vrindavan. Srila Tamalkrishna Goswami and Brahmananda Prabhu were there, and they mentioned that Srila Prabhupada, if the devotees hear that you are leaving, they may want to come and be with you. And Srila Prabhupada replied, yes, they can come. But thousands of devotees may come. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, we can accommodate them. Then, but then again, there may be some devotees who feel that they can serve you better or please you more by staying where they are and distributing books. Srila Prabhupada replied, then they can stay. So the devotees in the West were informed, and somehow we had the idea that Srila Prabhupada didn't like flying. So we arranged for him to go by train from Bombay Central. And it was quite a pathetic situation. We all felt like the residents of Vrindavan when Krishna left. Because when Krishna left, he never returned, apparently. And many of the devotees in Bombay also had the same feeling, that when Srila Prabhupada leaves now, he may never return. So, I contacted Nathji Das that he should bring a car and drive Srila Prabhupada to the train station. And he had an old Dodge, or an old Plymouth. And so we arranged for Srila Prabhupada to lie down on the back seat. And Nathji Das was driving. I was in the front seat with another devotee, and maybe Goswami Maharaj and Upendra Prabhu were in the back seat with Srila Prabhupada. So, as the car was pulling out from in front of the guest house, so many devotees and friends, they just started running from all directions to see Srila Prabhupada, maybe for the last time, and they were all crying, because they all apprehended that Srila Prabhupada may not return. So we were driving in the car, and it was almost painful for us, because we could imagine how painful it was for Srila Prabhupada in the back seat. But we left early, and as we were approaching maybe Haji Ali area, we started to discuss that there was more than an hour until the scheduled departure of the train, and that instead of going directly to Bombay Central, we could stay somewhere else, maybe at Sea Face Park, where Nathji Das stayed, and then just before the train would leave, we could go to the station. So, as we were speaking, Srila Prabhupada, we didn't know if he was listening or resting, but he started saying, what is that? What are you saying? So he told him, and Srila Prabhupada said, no, let us go direct to the train station. So we went direct to the train station, and we were at least 45 minutes early. when one devotee came rushing to the car from inside the train station, saying that the schedule had changed as of today. And according to the new schedule, the train was leaving in 5 minutes. So we took Srila Prabhupada out of the car, maybe we had a wheelchair, and running with Prabhupada in the wheelchair.
Brahmananda carried him.
Oh, Brahmananda carried him. And devotees carrying the luggage, and we just got to the train in time. Srila Prabhupada was sitting in his compartment, and Bhaktidas was feeling somewhat exhausted from the journey and thirsty. So he went to the booths they have on the platform to get a limca. And suddenly a devotee came rushing and saying, Prabhupada wants to see you. So he dropped everything and went in the compartment. And Prabhupada maybe put his hand on Nathji's head and blessed him. And then the train was about to leave and Nathji Das had to come out and we jumped on and then we proceeded to Vrindavan.
For those who have been with Prabhupada, they'll know that he never stayed anywhere very long. He was always traveling, and wherever he stayed, he was very active. But the special feature of Prabhupada's final pastimes is that all of the action took place in the emotional exchanges between Prabhupada and his disciples. Because there was no real action, because he couldn't move. And there was no preaching programs by this time. There was nothing except the exchanges between Prabhupada and the disciples. So as the news went around the world, Prabhupada had gone back to Vrindavan, and that he had said that anyone who wanted to could come. So many devotees began to come. And whereas previously Prabhupada always saw devotees according to a schedule, now pretty much anyone could be with Prabhupada almost any time they wanted to be. He wanted 24-hour kirtan to be done, and so we got a little pair of kartals, very small, finger cymbals, and they were the only instrument. And devotees would come and they would chant kirtan, Hare Krishna, kirtan, very softly. And anyone who wanted to could come and massage Prabhupada, sit with him as many hours as they wanted. And it went on like this for week after week. Srila Prabhupada told us that his father, in the last 4 months of his life, stopped eating. And the same thing now happened to Prabhupada. He lost his appetite. And for the final 4 months, he didn't eat anything practically. He just drank liquids. Then, suddenly, Prabhupada had a dream. He dreamt that a Ramanuja Kaviraj with Ramanuja, two red stripes, tilak, came to take care of him. And so he gave instruction that we have to find this Ramanuja Kaviraj. Now, there were probably quite a few Ramanuja Kavirajas. So it wasn't a very easy thing to do. So Ajudharan Prabhu in Calcutta, the temple president, he began to somehow or other interview different Kavirajas. And finally he found a very well-known Kaviraj, who was treating many people. And his name was Damodar Prasad Shastri. And he told him about Prabhupada. And this Kaviraj had so many very celebrated patients, but on the request of Adri Dharana Prabhu, considering Prabhupada's position and importance in the world, he dropped every one of his patients and came with Adri Dharana to Vrindavan. As soon as he saw Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, "This is the person I saw. But this is the right person." And immediately Damodar Prasad said, "I will cure you." So the first thing he said is that we should give Prabhupada, you know, I think 500 cc's a day of milk. The Prabhupada couldn't take anything except practically water. And he said, "I will give you medicine that you can take this milk and you can keep it and digest it." And he gave him the medicine and he took the milk and he could hold it. He had so much power, this Kaviraj. Then he said, "Now I will go and I will get different ingredients. Crushed pearl," and he named different ingredients. And he said, "I will make all of these medicines myself." And he started to serve Prabhupada, you know, like non-stop, day and night. And actually, all the things that he said would happen, happened, except that Prabhupada really didn't get better. In other words, he could take the milk, he could digest it, he could do so many things, but the health actually did not return. Because when the time comes for someone to leave, then that time is there, no matter how qualified the doctor is. And this doctor was a very qualified doctor, we could see that. But it was not meant to be. Then Srila Prabhupada suddenly decided, he got the inspiration, "I want to go to Govardhan." And by this time his health was so fragile. Of course I should say that before this time Prabhupada started to say that let's have some fun by consulting astrologers. Because by this time all the doctors had failed. And so he decided, let's try and see what the astrologers say. He said, "We'll have some fun by consulting them." So they all gave different things, but one of them, who took Prabhupada's chart and he made it, he sent back the report that this, he said, "I am speechless, because when I study the chart, I see that this is the chart of a Mahapurush who is an incarnation of the Lord." And he said that, and he gave all the reasons why, according to the planetary arrangements of Prabhupada's birth chart, why he was an empowered incarnation of God. And when I read this to Prabhupada, Prabhupada just went like this. He accepted. He didn't say no, no, he listened to it, and then he accepted it. So we heard today that one of Prabhupada's godbrothers also identified, and this astrologer also could identify from Prabhupada's birth chart, that he was an empowered incarnation of the Lord. He said, because it's impossible for someone to have all of these auspicious signs without being an incarnation. But anyway, they gave different things. Prabhupada also was told by one astrologer to get a special type of a stone to wear. And one of his disciples, Guru Kripa Prabhu, who was here today, he went and got this yellow, it was a yellow sapphire, very rare stone. And he got a big yellow sapphire, and Prabhupada wore this as a ring. Different things were being tried, but ultimately they were not really working. Prabhupada's former family member, one of his sons came. And Prabhupada's son had a baby daughter. So Prabhupada wanted to give some prasad. So he had me take off the rings off his fingers. And he handed them to his son. And he said, "You melt these down and make a bracelet for her." I was thinking in my mind that what people would have paid for those rings. You know, any one of those rings could have been sold to someone for $5,000 or more. It could have made hundreds of bracelets. But that wasn't the point. It was a special mercy that Prabhupada was giving to this granddaughter to give some special prasadam like this. I remember from New Vrindavan, ice cream was brought. All the way from New Vrindavan, and there was still ice cream. And they brought the ice cream along with a golden spoon. And maybe you remember what was sent. And Prabhupada took the ice cream on the gold spoon and took took it and ate it. It said, very nice. And they also gave him a ring at that time. So then when Prabhupada got the ring, he said, so, where is the bride? Different gifts were being brought like this to Prabhupada. Treya Rishi Prabhu came from Iran, and he brought fresh oranges from Iran. You know, people were coming from all over the world and bringing the speciality of that place to Prabhupada, some special offering from different parts of the world. And one way or another, Prabhupada was accepting everything and just exchanging with the devotees. Different devotees would come, and they could see it was the last time that they were going to be able to get some instruction, and Prabhupada would give them what was the final instruction for each of these devotees. And while all of this was going on, of course, as I said before, devotees were able to give personal services to Prabhupada, massaging him, just sitting there with him, singing for him. And then Prabhupada wanted suddenly to be taken to Govardhan. And then it turned out that it was just about Govardhan Puja Day. We asked Prabhupada, how is it possible? And Prabhupada said, I want to go to Govardhan in a bullock cart. Prabhupada couldn't even stand being turned around the bed. It felt painful. And yet now he wanted to go on a bullock cart to Govardhan. And he said, I promise you I won't leave my body. Somehow take me there. But it was like unbearable for us to think. We really felt that Prabhupada was just trying to give up his body by doing this. So we went through great struggle between the devotees who felt that we should take Prabhupada to Govardhan because he's saying it and he's the spiritual master. And others who felt that it was impossible. So gradually those who felt it was impossible, their view prevailed. And we begged Prabhupada, and Prabhupada finally said, then I don't want to cause you any grief like this. I won't go. Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj, his godbrother, who we heard Govinda Maharaj glorifying, Srila Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj, he was there that evening, and he was just laughing, and he said, see, Babaji Maharaj, just see how much they loved me. And Prabhupada's heart was so soft, and we were crying. We went into Prabhupada's room, we started crying, please don't go, please don't go, it will be impossible for you to maintain. We were just crying. Prabhupada, you know, he just changed his mind. Then in the last day or two, which was leading up to this day, Prabhupada began to speak less. And he began to move his body and his arms in very unusual ways. And Srila Narayan Maharaj came. Actually, Prabhupada had had me bring him there a number of times, along with one of his brahmacharis.
Sukhananda
Brahmachari, who was expert in massage. And Srila Narayan Maharaj came and he explained to us that this is not an ordinary material thing. But it is a sign of spiritual ecstasy, the way Prabhupada's body was being moved. And because his body was moving in a very unusual way, it was moving his arms, even though he couldn't move his arms, but suddenly his arms and legs, he would move them. And he said these are symptoms of spiritual ecstasy. And Prabhupada's consciousness was perfect when he started to talk to Srila Narayana Maharshi and had a long discussion with him, exchanged very nicely, and he said, you know, that these things have been recorded, I think, and spoken about. He told him, he begged forgiveness from him. He said to please request all my God brothers to please forgive me if ever I have said anything which offended them, but I only did it for the sake of preaching, sometimes to encourage my disciples in a certain way or something like this. Please ask him to forgive me. And Srila Narayana Maharshi said that there's no question of you ever offending anyone. You could never offend anyone. You're Krishna's pure devotee. And if anyone has created any offense, it is from our side. And many nice exchanges like this. And then Prabhupada finally did what I never saw him do before in all the years, which is that he withdrew his consciousness completely from any external discussions. He just drew his consciousness in. And it was impossible to contact it. He just withdrew into himself. It's not that he was unconscious, because he wasn't unconscious. There were indications clearly that he was in perfect consciousness, because at one point, when some God brothers came to see him, he immediately knew that they were there. He offered his obeisances with his hands, and he spoke to them. And except for that time when they came, and then he told me to give them chairs. So he was in perfect consciousness. But he understood that now the time had finally come. And he totally withdrew his consciousness inside. And somehow we could sense what was going to happen. The Kaviraj told us that now he has only a few more hours. And if you want, I can extend it. But it may require using tubes and things. And then we all told him that Prabhupada said, never let them put any tubes in me. So we said, no, don't do that. And so we surrounded Prabhupada's bed. As many people as possible sat with him on the bed. The kirtan was building more and more and more and more until it was just about this time, 7:20, and the kirtan had risen to a very, very high pitch. And at a certain moment, Prabhupada opened his mouth and he chanted, and his soul departed out of his body. And of course, the devotees began to wail very, very loudly. And they realized that Prabhupada had departed. And for a long time they cried. And then gradually we did the needful. We bathed Prabhupada. Well, first we took him to dress him properly. And we took his body and put it on the Vyasasan. And then we informed all of the Vaishnavas from Vrindavan. And Srila Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj came, and Srila Narayana Maharaj came. And they stayed with us all night, and we chanted for Prabhupada's continuously bhajans. Srila Narayana Maharaj brought his brahmacharis from his mat. For him, throughout the streets of Vrindavan, to all the seven major temples. And in each temple, they took flower garlands, and they garlanded Prabhupada with the prasadam garlands from the deities of every major temple. And the whole people of Vrindavan, everyone came out on the streets. Everyone came out. Prabhupada was the most famous and illustrious son of Vrindavan. He had brought Vrindavan to the people of the whole world. He had made Vrindavan famous. And now everyone, for the last time, came to offer Prabhupada homage. Finally, we returned, and Prabhupada had told me already that when he left his body, he wanted his samadhi. He indicated the location. And he said that some of the flowers from the samadhi ceremony should be taken to Mayapur to make another samadhi. And he ordered that Srila Narayan Maharaj should perform his samadhi ceremony. And he said that none of my material family members should have anything to do with the ceremony. He said only you, my disciples, and of course Srila Narayan Maharaj should, he said, should do the ceremony, that he knows and he will do it. So Srila Narayan Maharaj very nicely and Srila Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj chanting, we took Prabhupada's body and put it into samadhi. There's a ceremony for the sannyasi's samadhi. Samadhi means to come to that position which is equal to that of the Lord's. That means to the ceremony by which one enters into the Lord's pastimes. So it's a very, very special sacred ceremony, and it was performed. I appreciate so much Srila Narayan Maharaj's help as Prabhupada's, one of Prabhupada's senior sons. He wanted me to do everything because he felt it was proper for a disciple to do these things. So he was taking my hand because I did not know how to do each thing, and he made me do each of the things, bathing the body, putting mantras. He wrote mantras in Prabhupada's body, special samadhi mantras for sannyasi, acharya. And then we began to cover Prabhupada's body, and all of the devotees covered the body with salt. That's actually the samadhi ceremony, the insult, so the body is preserved. And then gradually with the earth, then an earthen mound was built and tulsi was planted directly in that place where Prabhupada's body was. And we began to perform the worship. And so this was the day in which Srila Prabhupada departed from this world. And gradually, of course, we have all come to live with Prabhupada's physical absence by understanding that he's only physically absent. But as the first speaker today, His Holiness Satchinanda Swami Maharaj said that his association gradually became apparent to us in many other forms. We began to experience Prabhupada's presence in many, many ways. And so we've been able to sustain our life in his physical absence. Now we have come to the end, at least of this lila. Now, at this time, they usually perform an arati for Prabhupada, but that is being done there while we are here speaking about Srila Prabhupada. Every year they do this arati. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai!
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai!
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai!
Philosophical truth that we can associate through sound vibration. On the spiritual platform, Krishna's pastimes, Sri Mahaprabhu's pastimes, and those pure devotees such as Srila Prabhupada's divine pastimes are eternal. They are not limited by time or by space. Through sound vibration, these personalities and their divine lila are manifested in our hearts. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us that when you're hearing Krishna's pastimes, through sound vibration they are being reenacted. And if you have the purified consciousness, you can witness those pastimes through that sound. The pure devotee never dies. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. Vaishnavas die to live and live to spread the holy name around. Srila Prabhupada's instructions are his divine presence in our lives. Prabhupada told us Vani and Bapu. Bapu is temporary, but Vani is eternal. And we see in the lives of such nice and wonderful devotees like Srila Giriraj Maharaj, Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, how they are living with Prabhupada, and how they are remembering their wonderful relationships with Prabhupada. They are perhaps more deeply associating with Prabhupada than during that historical time when it physically took place. And how they are giving all of us that same intimate experience of being with Srila Prabhupada. This is the beauty and the sweetness of the path of bhakti, is that there is never an end. It is ever fresh and always dynamic. And by the inspiration of hearing the glories of Srila Prabhupada's most unique and wonderful devotional service, we become inspired to serve his mission and serve his instruction. And in that service, we will find a deeper relationship with Prabhupada than anything that could possibly be experienced on the physical plane. I think you will both agree. So it is not that anyone is bereft of Srila Prabhupada's association because of some limitation of time. Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, but every time we chant his name and serve his word as given in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we are in the divine presence of Sri Krishna. Today, Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj read this beautiful passage from the diary of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada lived here in Vrindavan for many years. Vrindavan is his eternal home. But how he left, just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the sannyas order to chase after the most envious conditioned souls, leaving his beloved wife and mother. Srila Prabhupada left Vrindavan in a physical sense in order to give Vrindavan to the whole world. And that he did. And by his grace we are all here today. He wrote that today is Gaur Purnima, and all of my God brothers they are together. They are having wonderful kirtans, wonderful harikatha, wonderful prasad in the holy dhams of Vrindavan and Navadvip. And I am alone, without a single devotee within 10,000 miles. But this is where my Guru Maharaj wants me, because Mahaprabhu's mission is meant to be spread throughout the world. This is the most intimate desire of Srila Prabhupada, because it is the intimate desire of Sri Radharani to give the love of Braja to the world. And Srila Prabhupada was willing to accept any inconvenience and risk his life in every respect for that purpose. And the most intimate relationship we can have with Srila Prabhupada, more intimate than if we were sitting right at his feet, is when we dedicate ourselves as the servants of his servants to assist in his divine mission of spreading the glories of Vrindavan through the world, through Harinam Sankirtan.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I cannot speak anything with such intimacy and depth as these two great souls, but I will share a small experience that I had. When Srila Prabhupada wrote that letter that devotees should go to Vrindavan, that letter was never read to any of us, out of fear that we would all go to Vrindavan. We never heard such a thing. We only heard that Prabhupada went to Vrindavan and that he was improving and that he was going to recover. Every night, I was having dreams, and I approached my senior godbrother and told him that I know Prabhupada's going to leave. I'm begging you, please kindly let me go to Vrindavan, because my service then was all night kirtan. I said, let me just go back to Vrindavan, because I hadn't been there since I left in 72. Let me, the perfection of all my desires, if I could just chant all night for Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. But my godbrother said, after 2 months, I will take you. But now you have to perform your service, because I was also head pujari. And I believed that being the servant of the servant was the best way I could serve Prabhupada. I shouldn't act independently. But literally, every night for weeks, I was having the most wonderful, sweet, and beautiful dreams in my whole life. I was massaging Prabhupada. I was milking cows for Prabhupada and bringing him the milk. I was cooking for Prabhupada, speaking with Prabhupada. They were more real than life. And when the news came that Srila Prabhupada had left the world, it was total devastation. A feeling of being completely lost. Like, where are we to go? What are we to do? Who are we? It was like the whole universe became a dreary void. It was as if There was no reason to live or reason to die. Whatever we dedicated our life to was no longer there. But then I went with a couple of my godbrothers to Srila Prabhupada's palace in Vrindavan, which was just a construction site. Actually, there was three of us. Kirtanananda Maharaj, myself, and Ladini, one lady devotee, a very advanced lady. And we just stood in this little construction site, and Prabhupada was sitting. There was a picture of Prabhupada. And I was just weeping and crying, praying to Prabhupada, give me direction. And I can say in those prayers, all of us felt Prabhupada's presence more than we ever did, even when we were sitting a few inches away from him. And Prabhupada gave us the realization that he's not dead, that he's living forever. On a physical plane, he did the needful to gain our faith and inspiration, to connect us to this great sampradaya of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And now, through his divine grace, he's pushing us forward. So it is in service and associating with great devotees that we could live forever with Srila Prabhupada. Hari Bol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tonight, through the most beautiful narrations of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Srila Giriraj Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada has made his appearance in our hearts. So we are eternally grateful to these most compassionate and great souls for giving us the treasure of their divine association and the divine association of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prabhupada always told us, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Everyone, please take the dust from the lotus feet of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Srila Giriraj Maharaj, and offer your respectful obeisances. Please come by one by one.